Good evening, everyone. If you would please turn to Daniel chapter 3. I'm actually going to be reading a lot from there here in a few moments. Daniel chapter 3. I want to thank Quaid for reading what I asked him to earlier. I think that's going to be an important part of what I have to say tonight. So before I begin, I'd like to go ahead and just put in a few things before I begin. So first of all, thanks to the elders and everyone who supported me to do this and encouraged me to do it. Something I maybe not as most comfortable to do, but I'm glad to have the opportunity to do it. The other thing is I'm not the local evangelist here. That being said, if there's anything that goes wrong tonight, I got all my training for like the last week from Jacob, so you can blame him. Lastly, just want to thank all our visitors for being here. I have some friends here tonight who are here supporting me, and it's like, it's a really big encouragement to have people who do that for you. So today I have titled my lesson, Refining Our Faith. Really what I'm getting at is strengthening it. I think most of us here have faith in God, and that's why you're here, or you have some inkling that you believe there is a higher being. So maybe what I would like to try to do is, okay, so how can we make that faith stronger? My goal tonight is to read Daniel chapter 3 and maybe look at a few things that we get from that chapter of how we can strengthen our faith. Kind of give you some context of where we're at. Daniel chapter 3, the book of Daniel is when Babylon has invaded Jerusalem, and King Nebuchadnezzar has taken the first group back, and Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are all the first group. Curtis, I'm sure you would give a way better history lesson than me than that, but that's pretty much where it's at for me. To kind of give you context, chapter 1, the foundation of these men's faith is kind of established, and they won't eat the king's food. They're brought back, and the king has food for them to eat, and they decide not to eat it because it'd violate God's law. Ended up being that through that, their faith was proven, and they ended up being stronger than the other, people who were captured. Chapter 2, Daniel interprets the king's dream, and kind of basically what that does is puts him in a position of authority, and these men in a position of authority because Daniel brings them on. And then that kind of brings us to where we are at in chapter 3. So that kind of gets us there. So let's go ahead and start by reading. I'm going to read the whole chapter if you want to follow along. Daniel chapter 3, starting in verse 1. King Nebuchadnezzar made it a golden image whose height was 60 cubits and its breadth was 6 cubits. He set it upon a plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. Then King Nebuchadnezzar sent to gather the satraps, prefects, and the governors, and the counselors, the treasurers, the justices, magistrates, and all the officials of the province to come to the dedication of the image of the king Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Then the satraps, the prefects, the governors, counselors, treasurers, justices, magistrates, and all officials of the province gathered for the dedication of the image that King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And they stood before the image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up, and the herald proclaimed aloud, "You are commanded, O peoples, nation, languages, that when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, harp, bagpipe, and every kind of music, you shall fall down and worship the golden image King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. And whoever does not fall down and worship the image shall immediately be cast into the burning fiery furnace." Therefore, as soon as all the peoples heard the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, bagpipe, and every kind of music, all peoples, nations, languages fell down and worshiped the golden image that Nebuchadnezzar had set up. Therefore, at the time, certain Chaldeans came forward, maliciously accused the Jews. They declared to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. You, O king, have made a decree that every man who hears the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, bagpipe, and every kind of music shall fall down and worship the golden image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast in the burning fiery furnace. There was a certain Jew whom you have appointed over the affairs of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, pay no attention to you. They do not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his furious rage, commanded Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego to be brought. So they brought these men before the king. Nebuchadnezzar answered and said to them, "Is it true, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, that you do not serve gods or worship the golden image that I have set up? Now, if you are ready, when you hear the sound of the horn, pipe, lyre, trigon, bagpipe, and every kind of music, fall down and worship the image that I have made. Well and good. But if you do not worship, you shall immediately be cast in the burning fiery furnace. And who is the God who will deliver you from out of my hands?" Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to the king, "O Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, he will be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." Then Nebuchadnezzar was filled with fury, and the expression on his face changed against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And he ordered the fiery furnace be heated 7 times more than they usually heated it. And he ordered some of the mighty men to bind them into the burning fiery furnace. These men were bound in their cloaks, their tunics, hats, and garments, and they were thrown into the furnace because the king's order was urgent and the furnace was overheated. The flame killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. And these three men, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell bound into the fiery furnace. The king Nebuchadnezzar was astonished and rose up in haste. He declared to the counselor, "Did we not cast three bound into the fire?" They answered and said to the king, "True, O king." And answered and said, "But I see four unbound walking in the midst of the fire, and they are not hurt. And the appearance is forced like the Son of God." Then Nebuchadnezzar said, came near to the door of the furnace. He declared Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, "Servants of the Most High God, come out and come here." Then the Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps, prefects, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together and saw that the fire had not had any power over the bodies of those men. The hair on their heads was not singed, their clothes was unharmed, and the smell of fire did not come upon them. Nebuchadnezzar answered, said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants, who trusted him and set aside the king's command and yielded their bodies rather than worship the God except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, or language that speaks anything against Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego be torn limb from limb and their horses laid to ruins, for there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way." Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. So I know that was a lot to read. But I wanted to read the whole thing because I think it's just really good to see the whole picture of the whole story. So this story has just always amazed me in the sense of these guys' faith. I'm just going to use the three because I don't want to say their name every time. The three's faith. So one thing that always just blows my mind about them is when you're faced with certain death, that you're going to be killed, they state something to the effect of, "We'll not serve you, because our God will save us, but if he doesn't, let it be known, O king, that we will not serve your gods." And that just mentality of faith is just something that sometimes it almost feels unrelatable. Like, I can't even achieve that. And so the goal tonight is to maybe talk about some ways that we can try to achieve that or feel that we're close to that. So the first sign that I think you're kind of heading in the right direction or that your faith maybe is stronger than what you think it is in specifically in verses 8 through 10. So in verses 8 through 10, we see that the Chaldeans came forward maliciously accusing them that they would not bow down to Nebuchadnezzar's image. So what I want to recognize here is they were recognized that they were different. People recognize when you're not following somebody. And clearly the Jews were recognized that they weren't bowing down to another god. So the thing I want to ask is, you know, the question is, do people think you're different? And what I'm not saying is, I don't want us to think that we have to be different just to be different, because I don't think that's meaning to be awkward or anything like that. But what I am saying is, do people recognize that you are trying to be a Christian? And I think that's a very important thing, and I'm not saying that that's perfect or not, but I also don't want to think that that we just can do whatever we want, but that we are trying and we are putting our full effort in. So what comes to mind is Romans chapter 12, verses 1 through 2, if you guys will turn there. So I feel like this topic has been talked a lot about in the last few months in Bible classes and stuff, so I feel like a lot of this is good to go over. Okay. Romans 12 and verses 1 and 2. I appeal to you, therefore, brothers, by the mercies of God, to be present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy and acceptable to God, which is your spiritual worship. Do not be conformed to the world, but be transformed by the renewal of your mind, that by the testing you may discern the will of God and what is good and acceptable and perfect. So I think for us that idea of that step of trying to be different is allowing your mind to be renewed by the scripture. And so I think skipping down in that passage in verses 9 through 21 is kind of that, maybe some examples of how you can renew your mind. So let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Hold fast to what is good. Love one another with brotherly affection. Outdo one another, showing honor. Do not be slothful in zeal, but be fervent in spirit. Serve the Lord. Rejoice in hope. Be patient in tribulation. Be constant in prayer. Contribute to the needs of the saints. Bless those who persecute you, and bless and do not curse them. Rejoice and with those who rejoice. Weep with those who weep. Live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be wise in your own sight. Repay no evil for evil. And so I'm not going to finish that, but you kind of get the picture, right? There's these things that we are supposed to be living our life that we set an example with. And I think clearly that's what these three men were doing, is they were living their life and not letting it affect them. And so in conclusion to that, I feel like Christians struggle a lot with this. And I more think about it, is the line is kind of becoming blurred in today's society. I mean, this is maybe through all societies, but in my generation, I feel like the line between whether you're different is harder to distinguish. And I'm going to use a really cheesy example that you guys may think is dumb, but just hear me out, okay? So I look at Christianity today, and I'm going to use rap or hip-hop music as an example. So first of all, I really like the music. I like the rhythm. I like the creativity. I even like some of the lyrics and the meanings that they have. But in all seriousness, most of it is trash, and I can't listen to it. So what has Christianity done with that? Well, we made Christian rap, right? So it's not necessarily wrong, and that's not what I'm trying to say is wrong, because I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Like, I listen to it too. I'm just saying, every time the world does something, do we try to copy it? And I think there is a ton of times that we do that, and that line becomes blurred. And I even have some songs that were Christian artists, and they even use some profanity in it. And a lot of the artists, like when you listen to what they're talking about, they're like, "Well, I'm trying to draw the emotion of the situation out." And everyone's at different stage in their faith, right? So I don't know where they stand. It's just, are we trying to be more like the world, or are we trying to be renewed? And that's what I'm trying to say. And I just want to put that out for you guys to think about. And so some questions that I like to think about when I was challenged by this, when I read this, is what kind of music do you listen to? What kind of movies do you watch? How do you dress? How do you act at work? I don't know, what kind of clothes do you wear? You know, I'm just saying, how are you trying to, and I'm, like I said, what I'm not saying is we have to be really awkward people and be completely different, because I don't think that's true whatsoever. I'm just saying, is your first option to serve God? So, and are you making your decisions because of that? So I hope you guys understand what I'm saying on that. That was kind of the first line I'd like for you guys to think about. The second thing that I'd like for us to think about is, maybe to help refine our faith, is in Daniel 3, verses 26 through 30. Daniel 3, 26 through 30. Okay. Then Nebuchadnezzar came near the door of the burning fiery furnace. "Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, come here." Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came out of the fire, and the satraps and the men, and he saw that the hair was not burned on their heads. Nebuchadnezzar, this is the part that I think is interesting. This is verse 28. "Answered and said, Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel and delivered his servants, who trusted him and set aside the king's command and yielded up their bodies rather than serve the God. Therefore, I make a decree, rather than serve any God except their own God. Therefore, I make a decree, any people, nation, language, speak, shall be torn limb from limb and their horses laid to ruins. For there is no other God who is able to rescue in this way." So I think we know, just from looking at, if you've read Daniel at all, but for those who maybe haven't read all of it or don't know the context, Nebuchadnezzar ends up kind of, you know, this happens and he sees this great thing, and then literally in the next chapter, God curses him to walk on all fours for a very long time, and he's eating grass out of a field because he didn't put his faith in God. And so, kind of what I'm afraid that we do, we don't necessarily deny God, but we ignore him, just like he did. And that could be on anything. I mean, if you want to even talk about what we just mentioned, you know, the questions about music, or just not being committed 100%. I mean, I do this. This is why I bring this up, is how do we get our faith deeper? And I just think it's important to not ignore things. So, I just want to make sure I'm not missing something. And I think the other thing that this is such a scary thing too, when you ignore it, because clearly Nebuchadnezzar here, you see, accepts God. He accepts that he's true, he believes in him, but he still denies him. And I think that's the biggest fear, is because a lot of times we do that, we accept him, we believe in him, and then we don't do anything with it. We just leave it there, and a lot of us get caught up in life, and that's what happened to Nebuchadnezzar. Is at the end of chapter 4, he ends up saying, I think this is chapter 4, verse 29, he says, 12 months later, as the king was walking on the roof of the royal palace of Babylon, he said, "Is this not the great Babylon I have built as the royal residence, but my mighty power and the glory of my majesty. You know, he's just so focused on his life and like what he's got in front of him that he's not making his decisions on God or anyone else. He's just doing it purely for himself, and he thinks it's all him. And I think that's the danger for us, is to me, when you just ignore that, it's almost like you can get lost really fast. And sometimes you don't even know that you're lost because you're not thinking about it. And that's what, in my opinion, happened to him, is he just moved straight on. And so I think there's many things we can do in society that that prevent us from focusing on God and his faith and building our faith in him. Let's turn to John chapter 9, verses 18 through 34. Yeah. So, in this passage, kind of to give you context, this is when Jesus heals the blind man. And I'm more just trying to give another example of maybe the similar thing happening and how we can maybe relate to this is in John chapter 9. And I'm going to start in verses 18 through 34. So Jesus had just healed a blind man and who's been blind since birth. And now we're getting to see the argument or discussion between the Pharisees and this man and his parents and Jesus. So starting in verse 18, the Jews did not believe in that he had been blind and he had received sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight and asked him, "Is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see? His parents answered and said, "We do not know. We know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but how he sees we do not know, nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him, he is of age, he will speak for himself." His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be the Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, "He is of age, ask him." For the second time, they called the man who had been blind and said to him, "Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner." And he answered, "Whether he is a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, and though I was blind, and now I see." They said to him, What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He said and answered them, "I've told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you yourselves want to become his disciples?" And they reviled, saying, "You are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from." The man answered, said, "Why this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, yet he opens my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, how could he do nothing? They answered and said, "You were born in utter sin, and you would teach us," and they cast him out. So the first thing I noticed is just similar to Nebuchadnezzar, is these men believed, right? They didn't believe, and then they say in verse, I want to say it's 18, until they called the parents of the man. So they believe once they called the parents of the man that he was blind and now can see. Okay, so, and then the second thing is, what did they do? They didn't do anything. They just cast them out. So instead of accepting it and wanting to do something with it, they just got it out of their sight. And I think a lot of times we do that too. Like when we're feeling challenged about our faith, we just try to if you're like me, you try to tuck it away and not think about it too much because it makes you uncomfortable. And like, I think that is a very scary thing. And if you want to feel like you have a confident faith that you truly believe that there is a creator, you can't hide it. It's not healthy for you. That's kind of the second thing. So I just want to make sure that we don't ignore what God has done and that we choose to follow his word because of it. The third thing that I would like to point out of this passage, so going back to Daniel 3, it's in verses 13 through 18, which is really the most obvious statement in the book for me. And it's really the passage that states, it's in verse 17, I'm going to start right there. And this is their response to Nebuchadnezzar after he basically threatens their life. He says, "If this be so, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the fiery furnace, and he will deliver us out of the hand, O king. But if not, be it known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up." So this phrase, "but if not," is such an interesting phrase to me because it's not conditional. I think a lot of the times we as Christians, God is conditional to us. Our faith is conditional. I'm going to use maybe, I have a friend who has cancer, and if I pray a bunch and if God doesn't heal him, then God doesn't exist. He's not listening. He's not answering my prayers. And I think this is where it's hard for me to get to that next step on that that but if not type of faith. And sometimes it's hard to accept when things go wrong and understand when that our God does exist. Let's go ahead and turn to Luke. Let's turn to Luke 22. This is just an example of someone trusting in God, and it's Jesus when he's sitting in the garden. Everyone probably knows this. So Jesus is sitting in the garden and he's about to be crucified. It's verses 20, chapter 22, verses 42 through 44. He's sitting in the garden and he's about to be betrayed, and he's asking God to remove the cup from him. He says in verse 42, "Father, if you are willing to remove this cup from me, nevertheless, not my will but yours be done." And they appeared to him, an angel from heaven, strengthening him. And he, being in agony, prayed more earnestly, and sweat became like great drops of blood. So I just, what makes me think about this is why I've quoted this here is a lot of times we're challenged and we don't know whether to establish our faith. And I think, you know, even the Son of God struggled with what was to come. And so struggle is going to happen. And I think even more importantly, in James 1, verse 2, we read James chapter 1, verses 2 through 8. We read that basically, "Count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet various trials of any kind, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness, and the steadfastness with its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing." So this idea of, you know, faith being a hard thing, I don't want it to be like, you know, if you're not having a challenging faith or you're not being persecuted, you're not strong. But that is how you get strong. I mean, it's the same as working out or something like that. You know, you'll never really know until you're tested. And I think we all are going to be tested in certain ways. You know, we're going to lose family members. We're going to lose parents, kids. You know, things will come, and how are we looking to God for them, and do we trust him to do those things? And James, you know, says we'll be lacking in nothing. We'll fully understand that. But he also says, basically, if we don't have that kind of faith, this is in, I think, verse 8. For that person must not suppose that they will receive anything from the Lord. He is a double-minded man and stable in all his ways. So, you know, like, somebody who doesn't accept that, you know, we're never going to feel stable. We're never going to really trust him that those things are going to go right. So, kind of close, I do want to kind of summarize maybe what I've talked about. The first thing that I talked about earlier was we need to recognize maybe if we're being different or not. Like I said, I don't want it to come across as you have to be, you know, just plain Jane. You can't be funny or whatever. You know the exaggeration I'm trying to get at. But do you try to generally seek to do God's will? The second thing is, do you ignore God? Do you ignore the things that he has set up for us? Do you ignore certain things because they know they're going to be uncomfortable for you? And the last thing is, do you serve him without stipulation? Or do you put stipulation, I'll serve you because of this? I'd like to close before evening. It's just a quote that really, this is the quote that got me really wanting to talk about this. And to me, it's something that I think is very powerful. And it made me think about what am I going to do with my faith? Am I going to allow it to be stronger or weaker? And do I really trust him, especially with the things that have happened in the last, you know, 2 years? There's been a lot of things that I think have pushed a lot of people to trust him or not trust him. Okay, so the quote is from, it's from Martin Luther King Jr., and it was during his sermon at the Atlanta Church, a Baptist church, in 1967. And it's actually about this passage, and it's, the title was But If Not. But this is just a segment of the sermon. This is his quote. He says, "You may be 38 years old, as I happen to be, and one day some great opportunity stands before you and calls upon you to stand up for some great principle, some great issue, some great cause, and you refuse to do it because you are afraid. You refuse to do it because you want to live longer. You're afraid or that you will lose your job. You're afraid that you will be criticized or you will lose your popularity." And I think, like, you know, this is, I think these are all things we can relate with. "Or you're afraid that somebody will stab you or shoot at you or bomb your house." That may not be something that we are as privy to, but it can happen. And so you refuse to take the stand. Well, you may go on live until you're 90, but you are just as dead as you were at 38, as you would be at 90. And the sensation of breathing in your life is but the belated announcement of an earlier death of the spirit. You died when you refused to stand up for right, and you died when you refused to stand up for truth. You died when you refused to stand up for justice. So what he's saying basically is, if you choose to do nothing about these things that I've talked about, your greatest fear of not having a faith will be realized. And I do not wish that upon anyone. So I know this is kind of, I was hoping to make, I don't want this to be too serious, but I would like all of us to try to work on these things, maybe to try to firm up our faith so that when trials do come, we are able to handle it like these three men. I haven't specifically talked about what it is to be saved or how to become a Christian. But if you would like to do that, we will offer an invitation song here in a moment. You're welcome to come up to the front to do that, or you're welcome to talk to the elders or any of the deacons after services about any questions. Thank you, guys.